Grumpy old geeks, two old farts, a microphone, and the internet. What could go wrong?
Hey, welcome from over the pond there, wherever you are in London County, Brian.
Hey, Jason. I'm going to apologize in advance to everyone for the sound quality, but when one of us is very, very far away and overseas and relying on hotel Wi-Fi, there's not much we can do. So, it's good. I'm very happily over here in the UK. I've been here since, I've been here, what, 5 days now already? Got about five more to go, and then before I head home. So, having a good time. Picked up a bit
drinking
of cold.
Lots.
Drinking lots of awesome beer. Fantastic beer. Love the pub stuff, and yeah, that's been a lot of fun. Working out of the hotel room, doing my mobile office thing, and yeah, just getting out and about, and that's probably how I got sick. I think I've been around more people just, you know, riding the tube and stuff like that than I've been around in a long time. So
I thought the whole point of going there was to have face-to-face meetings with some of your clients instead of working from the hotel.
Well, I mean, I'm doing that. Well, I only have one client here, so. And I've met with them already, and then later on tonight I'm going to have dinner with them again, so.
Okay, cool. Yeah.
Mostly it's just me fucking around and being in London instead of back in Venice.
So, speaking of, you left the day of the shooting. You had to deal with, like, that crap that was going on at the airport.
Yeah, I did. You were actually the first person that alighted me to the fact that that was even going on, because I was running around doing my last-minute packing thing, and you sent me a text saying, you're not leaving. And I was like, what? And I went and looked online and found out that there was been a shooting at LAX. Our flight was a bit later on in the day, so it was still touch or go. We weren't sure if we were going to make it. Our airline didn't update their website at all and basically just said, flight's on time. So we're like, fuck, what do we do? I guess we just go to the airport and see. And we had our cab booked, and he took us, and he's like, you know, the closest I can get you is the In-N-Out Burger, and you're going to have to walk in from there. So we got over to the In-N-Out, and basically, it was like a refugee camp over there. There was probably a good 200 to 300 people just sitting around at the In-N-Out because they had basically shut down the terminals, which you didn't really hear in the news, and LAX's website was down, and nobody was really kind of providing any information. So by the time we got over there, we couldn't even get into the terminals. I mean, we were still, you have to be there two and a half hours early for international flights, so we were there well before our flight was supposed to be, but the terminals were shut down. You could not walk into LAX. Everybody was just kind of standing around. And we just kind of hung out there for a while. And eventually we were like, well, we're supposed to be checking into our flight right now. The flight for, you know, New Zealand Airlines says our flight's still on time. I guess we should start walking. And we basically walked into LAX from In-N-Out Burger. And by the time we got over to the front, it was still not open. There was another good 600 to 700 people standing around with their luggage there, just at the entrance to LAX. And then they finally gave the all clear, and we got super lucky because we were like the first people up there, so straight through security. I heard it became a massive nightmare later on when other people started to come on over. And our flight was only delayed by about 2 hours, and out we were.
Oh, that's pretty good.
Yeah, we're kind of lucky, but it was definitely a bizarre experience. A lot of guns, a lot of cops, a lot of...
Yeah,
it was crazy.
Yeah, I had a friend who was going to New York who was in the terminal, and he was going to do a live video production for one of the clients
right.
I work with. And as the shooting started, he and his work buddy basically dropped their laptops and ran. And they couldn't get the laptops back even after everything was cleared up because they were basically collected as evidence.
Right. So, yeah, all that stuff is probably just still going to sit around for a long time. It was crazy how many people were actually at LAX that day. Like, you never think about it, but it is such a hub, and particularly, like, with the people that we know. I had two friends that had just landed, and you know, they were updating their Facebook or with you know, we're stuck on the plane. All the Mythbusters guys were there. And
yeah, that was crazy.
Like, yeah, it was just like, wow, there's just so many people. It was pretty insane.
Well, it is LAX. You know?
That's true.
So you do expect a few celebrities to be walking through every now and again.
Yeah.
Otherwise, TMZ, what would they do?
Exactly.
So, well, come back soon or stay as long as you want. I don't care.
Thanks. Well, if I stay longer, I'll have to get a microphone shipped over and some sort of setup. But no, I'll be heading back at the end of the week. So,
I mean, all these people you know are musicians. Couldn't you just bum one? Dude.
I didn't think about that. I probably could have gone over to a studio or two and done it from there. But, you know, I don't want to impose.
Oh, that's right. You're in Britain. Everybody must be polite.
That's right. Everybody. And they are, for God's sake. It is a much more refined culture over here. I have missed it.
So I want to do a little follow-up on a couple things from last week. We were talking about Terry Pratchett. And yes. this week, there's a really cool interview that came out in Boing Boing with Terry Pratchett, done by Cory Doctorow.
Mm-hmm.
Put a link in the show notes for that, but definitely check it out if you're into Pratchett. I thought it was pretty neat.
Yeah, I scanned over it really quick. I can't wait to finish the read, but you know, I love this guy, so it's great to hear anything that he has to say. And I did get he's going to continue or at least try to do one more Discworld book out of that, which I'm very excited about.
Yeah, very excited. So, yeah. And some follow up on WordPress. They finally released the WordPress 3.8 feature set, which I know most people won't really care that much about, but there's some neat stuff in there. And they're finally rolling in my favorite admin theme that's been kind of like an add-on for a while. I think it's called M6. That's getting baked in, which will make it so much nicer to deal with clients with because it's a much cleaner interface.
Right, right. Yeah, I saw a lot of that, so that's all very exciting as well. Any kind of date for this coming?
There's never any date. I mean, yeah, they try and do it every couple months, but it always changes a bit. I think this one they'll probably try and, you know, I couldn't even speculate. They seem to float a bit. And I do want to. I talked a couple times about some of my jobs that I was doing before, and one of them got an FWA award, Site of the Day award, so I was very excited. The funny part,
congratulations.
We got a site an FWA award after we'd already taken it down off of the, because it's a Facebook app, and we took it off the client site, but we just had left it up, and nobody thought to go turn the servers off. And it's called the Kia Forte Tech Athlete Games, and it was a series of five games that we did with a company down in New Zealand called Resin. And you use different controls for each game. Like, you'll use the microphone for one where you're, like, yelling into the phone because it's, like, that one's a ski-based game. Then you have a kayak game that you pair your cell phone with that had, like, this Node.js back end going on. And you use your cell phone to paddle. A couple of you use your mouse, your keyboard. It's kind of like track and field, but with, like, all these different inputs.
Right.
So,
well, congratulations, man. That's, side of the day. Awesome.
I'll take it.
Yeah, I was playing the game a little bit earlier. It was kind of fun. I was enjoying myself. I was doing the skiing one. Although it doesn't, like, I don't have a mouse. I was just, like, banging on my stupid little trackpad. But I'll have to try that again when I get back home.
If it's still there, we might have taken it down. But
if it's still
there. I think we're going to leave it up for a couple more weeks just because now that we have a little recognition for it, it's fun.
Cool. Yeah, so after the LAX experience, I mean, I've kind of just been bumming around London for the past few days and, you know, trying to have a little bit of fun in between work stuff. But I did notice, like, there's some significant differences over here, just as traveling and work and stuff like that. It is almost, well, first off, if you are traveling to the UK or anywhere in Europe, really, on your American wireless plan, my God, they screw you. It's beyond ridiculous what they do and what they want to charge you for data plans. It's sad. It's pathetic. You're almost better off just, like, coming over here and buying a pay as you go phone, except that you have to deal with giving new numbers to everyone and all that sort of stuff. I still don't there's absolutely no reason. It's just rape and pillage, basically.
I have heard that T-Mobile is really good for doing international travel.
I've heard that as well, but I'm a Verizon guy, and I've loved Verizon for years. But it's time for them to upgrade their international wireless coverage. It's really bad, and there's wireless throughout all of London. I mean, but good luck finding anything for free. There are absolutely zero free wireless anywhere you go, I've heard, except for McDonald's. Apparently McDonald's, I talked to some friends that live over here, and they say that they always pop into a Mickey D's in a pinch if they need to get some free wireless going. But like you would think, like all across, you know, the U.S. or whatever, you go to a restaurant, you go to a bar, they've got wireless. Maybe they have it password protected, but of course they're going to give it to you. But that's because we have free bandwidth still in the U.S. They don't have it over here in the U.K. It's pay as you go. You know, you have your caps just like in Canada, and what we're eventually going to get in the U.S. So that whole like free wireless thing that we have at like, you know, Starbucks or locations or wherever in the U.S., that is going away because, you know, these bars can't afford it. Like a pub can't afford to give you all their clients free wireless if they have to pay for it. So
okay, that's an interesting. We'll talk about that a little more in the news.
Yeah,
and I thought in Europe, I mean, UK and Europe are almost like two different things. But I know you're in Europe. Bandwidth is generally much better and much cheaper than it is over here. Is that? I mean, is it not the case in London? Is the bandwidth crap there too? I mean, are they paying? No, they have like crappy connections.
It's pretty good if you pay for it. Like you know, if you're on a wireless plan here, that's fine. And it's great, and apparently works pretty well everywhere for the most part, but it's not cheap. They're paying a lot for it. They finally are starting to roll out wireless and on the tube stations and underground, which I'm not entirely sure. I have to talk to a couple people a little bit more about this. I can't figure out if that's part of your wireless thing or not, because it seems to be sponsored only by Virgin. So if you're on a Virgin phone, is that part of it? If you're not, like if you're on an O2 phone, do you get to access wireless underground or not? It's all a bit unclear, but you can definitely sign up for it, but it's just crazy expensive. Like I could have bought like a £20 for 1 week. Or like a couple days or something like that, or a set amount of bandwidth and been able to get online while I was riding around on the tube. But I was like, I can just wait.
Yeah, how about you just have a vacation, dude? You know?
Yeah, so I'm actually trying to have a bit of a vacation and just not be able to get emails every 2 seconds or texts. So it's not as pervasive and all-encompassing as it is in the U.S. So
that's fine.
Yeah.
It's a holiday resort. Resort itself. Yeah.
And one other big thing that I noticed is there's not a lot of texting and walking here, which makes a lot of sense because the traffic is insane, and so is the foot traffic. Like, you'd be banging into people left and right. So that, again, is a bit more, like, civilized. People aren't just, like, buried on their phones when they're walking around.
That's nice.
Which is a good thing, yeah. Yeah, people are kind of, like, looking around and hanging out and talking and chatting. So not everybody just has walking around with their phone in their face and bumping into you left, right, and center.
Well, then yeah. I think there's probably a culling of the herd that happens over there, because if you're a foreigner talking and you're texting, you're dead.
If you're walking around talking and texting, you are going to get hit by a bus.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard enough to not get hit by a bus, as I've told you before, without a cell phone. I mean, having a cell phone and texting, you are just you're a smear on the pavement at that point.
Yeah. So for the most part, it's been pretty great here. The converter thing is pretty easy. Everybody, you know, you just have one or two converters. Even my hotel had two just sitting in here for power, so that was fantastic. You know, the wireless thing's a bit of a bitch, but you figure it out and you sort it out. Banks and credit cards are starting to drive me absolutely insane. When did we have to start to inform our banks and our credit cards when we're traveling? When did they become our
10 years ago.
I'm still not used to this. This still pisses me off. And I actually, like, I never got a notification. I went to the ATM and I pulled out, you know, like £100 or whatever for walk around money when I first got here. And it worked fine. And then 2 days later, I was like, well, that's all gone. Thanks a lot, beer. I need some more cash. So I went back to an ATM, denied, tried it like 5 times. And at that point in time, like, I really needed $20, like, pretty much immediately. I was about to hop on a train, and I had to call Wells Fargo and go, what the fuck? Why can't I not take out any money? And they're like, well, this is a security precaution. I was like, well, it worked when I first landed. I've already taken out money. You haven't sent me an email. You haven't texted me. I logged into wellsfargo.com and checked all my accounts last night. There was not a message telling me that my account had been shut down. What the hell? And then they went through the whole rigmarole where I had to give them like 15 to 20 different pieces of identifiable, you know, what was the last amount that you actually removed from anything? I was like, well, it was in pounds, so I couldn't tell you the exact amount. Well, we need it within $5 to be able to accept it. I mean, it just started to get insane. I was like, you hold my money. You make money off my money. You don't have interest rates anymore. It's not like we make any money from giving you our money. Give me my fucking money.
Yeah.
It was just really frustrating.
He's like, I can't get within $5, but I can get within one decimal point of fuck you.
Exactly. I mean, it got to the point where I was like, you know what? As soon as I come home, I'm going to switch banks. To hell with you guys. You're not letting me get my money. I'm in London. It's obvious I'm in London. I've given you everything. You have my social security number, which I just put out on the phone. Thanks, NSA. I hope you guys enjoy that. I was getting so angry. Anyways, whatever. I'm sick of the banks and the credit cards, and it's absolutely ridiculous, these security precautions that they do. Yeah, I get it. You don't want your card stolen, blah, blah, blah.
Well, you're dealing with a bank, so that's like, you know, direct access to money. That's not a credit card. That's a your debit.
Well, the credit
debit
cards are even worse.
See, I didn't have any problem, and when I went to Asia, like, I did the call beforehand because it's just right. Generally a good idea. Domestic travel, they know. They trace your gas from point to point.
Right.
So I'm never worried about that. But going international, yeah, I called my credit card companies in my bank just to say, hey, I'm going. Here's my thing. Even if you didn't notice that I put my flights on your credit card, so you should already know where I'm going. But just in case, because you can be a set of morons with all this, you know, because it comes down to, I think, once they started to take 100% liability on fraud protection and they take a bath on all that, then it's their prerogative to just be a little bit tighter about the restrictions. So, you know,
this
it happens.
True.
It happens.
I'm making it as a note from now on in future travel that I will definitely call and say, hey, I'm going, so please don't shut down my account.
Yeah, I mean, it really is a good idea. So sorry you ran into it, but, you know, Wells Fargo sucks anyway, so dump them.
Well, so does Bank of America. I mean, I left Bank of America to go to Wells Fargo, and they've been marginally better, but they all suck.
Yeah, I don't have any major, like, you know, these McDonald's of banks anymore. I do have, I've got like a kind of more of a business type of bank that I use, and for pocket money, I use Simple. I have an account at Simple Credit Union account,
right.
So I stay away from those. I've gotten screwed by Chase, which bought my favorite bank in the world, which was Washington Mutual back in the day. I'm sure this is fascinating stuff. This is what people are, you know, chomping at the bit for. So it's just
all right. So on a more interesting point, once I got my cash, I went straight to a pub called The World's End.
I saw your photo of this. I was pretty impressed. Now, was it? Did they do the? Is it kind of like a theme park bar where they did the bar like the movie, or was it just?
No, not at all. The inside is just your standard London pub, but I was very happy about it. I'm trying to find the Winchester. I actually drove past a place called the Winchester the other night, and I wanted to stop very badly, but I was late. So I did find a Winchester as well. But drinking at the World's End was pretty awesome. But it does bring up a good point. They made a number of jokes in that movie about how London or English pubs have kind of become very corporate. And they don't, you know, they're not individually owned anymore. They're corporations that own massive amounts of pubs about. So that has actually definitely happened. You know, my first time in London was probably 20 years ago. And one of the greatest joys was just walking down the street and, you know, going into every single pub and it being completely different and having its own character. So many of the pubs throughout London now are exactly the same, run by the same company. Menu is exactly the same. The beers on tap is exactly the same. It's a bit sad. There's still quite a few of independents. There's a lot more of a bar scene now than a pub scene. You know, your wine bars and all that kind of fancy pants stuff. But, you know, when you come to London, you want to do the pubs. And there's still quite a few independents around, but overall, it's all very kind of homogeneic now. And it's a bit sad. Oh, well. There you go.
Okay.
That's London for you. Still having a good time.
Yeah, knock yourself out, but you're going to Paris, which I think is even just sillier. But go enjoy your vacation, man. We'll talk when you get back. But let's get on to some tech. Let's bring the nerd to the beat.
All right. Let's nerd it up.
In the news.
So it is Thursday the 7th. I'm quite a few hours ahead of you, but right about now, or maybe about an hour ago, Twitter just went public, apparently.
Wee!
You know, at the... That's my earlier, like, London time morning, when I looked into this, it was a $14.2 billion evaluation. when I was about to head over to, when I was sitting at the pub having a beer right before coming back over here to record this, it had just been revised to $26 a share and a valuation of $18 billion. As I searched just a couple seconds ago, $45 a share is what it's going to be going for. Or is going for, because I assume the stock market is open now.
It opened a couple hours ago, yeah.
Yep, okay, there we go. Twitter shares opened up at $45.10 per share, which is double that amount, so that puts that evaluation at something around, $36 billion, which is absolutely fucking something insane, like right? I'm not crazy.
No, you're not crazy.
Okay.
No, this is the beginning of the end. I thought Facebook was going to do it, but I think this might have to be the one. You know what? I these are reindeer games that I can't play in, so I really don't care. But,
all right, I just wanted to throw out a couple other numbers because, yeah, I don't really get it either, but just as a point of interest. So we're looking at Twitter at being about $36 billion now. We talked last week about Pinterest at about $3.8 billion. Snapchat is $3.5 billion. Now, to contrast with, say, ExxonMobil, which is pretty massive, $414 billion. Apple's estimated at $318 billion. Microsoft at $233 billion. Google at $195 billion. That's a lot of billions for a lot.
Yeah, this is just silly money.
Yeah, it's silly money.
But at least, I mean, Exxon, we know what they do. Apple, we know what they do.
Microsoft.
Snapchat, really... In the $3.5 billion for sending pictures of underage boobies,
yeah,
I just don't see it.
Yeah, but, and Pinterest doesn't make sense either. And I still don't get Twitter.
Beat it to death. So,
yep.
It's like, you know, good for Ev. He's a billionaire now. And your little farm boy from Nebraska makes good.
Yep.
Couldn't really care about anybody else there, but I'm sure. I wonder if any of the early angels are going to make a big hit from this.
Yeah. They're all going to be very happy. So. So there you go. Something else that doesn't really make any money is worth a shit ton of money. And I just don't get it. So speaking of Google, I got some more news from them. It has come out that the floating barge in San Francisco that everybody's been very curious about is going to be a, quote, interactive space, end quote, whatever the fuck that means. So it's not the big floating container of cash that I figured they just didn't know where else to put.
that's literally their new offshore account. They just put it on a barge where everybody can see.
Yeah, exactly. That's kind of what I figured it was going to be. But no, it's going to be some sort of interactive space, and God knows what that means. Or,
well, I mean, first, the last thing I heard, it was like an invite-only, like, super store for, like, Google Glass and stuff like that.
Yeah, that would be pretty fancy.
I just think it's all speculation still, so who knows.
Yeah, well, that seems to be the current thought. Second bit of Google news, since they own YouTube, and as we all know, YouTube comments have needed an overhaul in a long time because it's basically just troll city and people just crapping all over everything and blah, 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 blah. So Google decided they needed to go in and fix that. What they decided to do is that they would tie all comments now into a Google Plus account. So if you want to make comments on YouTube, you have to have a Google Plus account.
Oh, yay. Well, I guess it's a little easier to track trolls down, but not really.
Not really.
Because Google's still trying to push for the real name initiative, which is just stupid, never going to happen.
Yep.
I've got all these problems with YouTube because I've got two Google Plus accounts that I can't merge. So which one do I comment with? You know, I can't merge all my videos because they're all distributed and fractured because of all. Remember when we used to talk about how the Google Plus accounts, like you had all the problems with your clients in the Google Plus accounts,
yeah,
and all that crap.
Yep.
I as a regular Joe had those Google Plus problems too. And they were never resolved.
Yeah. It's
so great.
A real
big
mess.
That's just,
I mean, like
it's a total mess.
You know, I signed up for a Gmail account for Slender, like slenderfungus@gmail.com, which is one of my email accounts, like ages ago, like right when Gmail first launched. I have no way to integrate that into the Google Plus account that I made. I just can't. It won't let me.
Yeah, there's no way to really just, you know, merge the two.
Yeah, which is just
stupid. They had some merge tools a while ago, and they still have some, but they're janky and they don't work.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
I would like one account that I can specify several email addresses for and say, these are the email addresses that work with this account. But you can't if you've got another account. And it's just like, what the Yeah, you guys are supposed to be smart.
One account to rule them all. One account to bind them. Sorry, geeked out. Yeah, and speaking of just weird-ass shit, Silk Road is back. 2.0. It's out now. Just launched. The Dread Pirate Roberts on Twitter announced it. You can never kill the idea of hashtag Silk Road. This is bigger than drugs or technology. This is taking back our rights by selling you drugs, technology, and underage children.
Yeah, good luck with that. if they can get to the last one, they can get to the next one.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. It's a cat and mouse game, and always will be. You know, I love when these guys that are doing things that are so obviously meant to harbor illegal and questionable and really morally undefinable items use the whole "this is taking back our rights" argument as the way to do it. So it's not really rights if you're selling drugs, which most countries have deemed illegal and making it easier for people to do that. But hey, you know, Dread Pirate Roberts, go for it. Buttercup would be really upset with you.
So yeah, he keeps using that word freedom. I don't think it means what it means. Now, this one, we actually put two different stories in our notes today. You have one about Blockbuster. I have another one about Blockbuster, but yours trumps mine. So let me just state for the record,
okay,
I am so happy this has happened. Blockbuster is gone.
Yeah.
Dead. Kaput. No more stores.
Yes, announced as – well, no, not entirely no more stores. There is a caveat to that. Blockbuster is finally shutting down completely. The last of their 300 U.S. stores are closing. Their subscription service is shutting down, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Apparently, though, there are 50 throughout the entire United States independently owned and operated Blockbuster branded stores that are staying open.
Not for long.
No, they won't be around long either. I mean, even, like, unless they turn themselves into something like Vidiot's in Venice, which is, you know, just this obscure kind of, like, Quentin Tarantino used to hang out there. You have to be a total film geek to want to be there. Store, it's just not going to last. Nobody does this anymore. Everybody's on their Netflix. So, bye-bye.
Yep. And, you know, you know the story about me and Netflix. Blockbuster. They killed my job, the best job I ever had. They killed it.
Right.
Just because they couldn't make any money. So I am happy to see them gone. Except the downside is they're owned by Dish Network now, not by Viacom. So Viacom didn't take the hit.
Right, yeah. Which is a bit of a bummer. I always like when Viacom gets hit.
Exactly. I want those bastards to suffer. So if you're going to steal a movie, kid, steal it from Paramount.
Right. Agreed.
So it's the end of an era. Blockbuster. Good riddance. So now we get back to this free versus paid bandwidth and connectivity issue.
Yeah.
And your town, Los Angeles, is going to roll out free internet. So explain that to me, Mr. Curmudgeonly. It's all going to shit in a handbasket.
I don't believe it for 2 seconds. I don't believe that this is ever going to happen. I think this is, you know, they're announcing that they're going to do it. They're trying to make a bunch of back-end plays to make it happen. It's not going to happen. This will never, ever launch. We've been hearing that Google was going to come into multiple cities and offer free high-bandwidth wireless, blanket the cities in free wireless. They haven't done it yet either. This is not going to happen.
They're working on it. They've been working on it. Fiber to the home.
They've been working on it for a long time, but nobody's had their free citywide internet yet. Even with those balloons.
Well, the balloons are coming. I can't wait.
I don't think this is ever going to roll out. I would like to see it. And even if they do end up rolling it out, it may be free for the first year, and then they're going to decide to start charging for it.
I think part of the deal is it's like a 2 megabit, you know, free connection, and then the people have the option to upgrade from there up to a gigabit,
yeah,
which would be, you know, that's fine. But if everybody in Los Angeles could get fiber to the home, which, you know, would take 2 generations,
yeah,
at the pace that it moves out there.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, it's a great dream, but I don't think it's going to happen. I was laughing when I read it. they want the vendor to pay for the $3 billion cost of laying all the fiber and all of the permits and, you know, yeah, all of the stuff. Basically, LA saying, if you want to come into our town and dig it up and put some fiber in, that's great, but you're going to pay for it.
Yeah.
So send us an RFP. It's like,
yeah, I mean, this is Los Angeles. Los Angeles can't get anything done, and so that won't happen anyways. But I just don't. I've been hearing, you know, a lot of companies have come in and said, we're gonna go into the city and we're gonna blanket them with free wireless and blanket them with free internet access, and I don't know of a single city that has completely free internet access anywhere.
Because there are businesses and companies that make money off providing internet. So why would you come in and say, oh, we're just going to give this to you for free and not expect to fight?
Exactly. So it's all bullshit. We're going to be paying for everything just like they are here in the UK, like they do in Canada. It's going away. It's going away. It's going away. Get used to it. No more free wireless anywhere.
Well, I'm taking advantage of it while I can.
Me too.
And there's a great story in Wired about how we're about to lose net neutrality, the net neutrality battle, just because of so many damn loopholes in the current laws, and they're rehearing the case on it or voting on the case. This was a couple days ago, so I haven't checked to see if we have a verdict yet. But if there is one, I'll put it in the show notes. But yeah, we're never going to win that battle.
No.
They're going to keep fighting, and they're going to keep trying to be sneaky, and they're going to start prioritizing packets and bilking companies for, you know, more than they deserve. It's, you know, Google pays for internet access.
Yeah,
I pay for internet access. So there's two points. People on either side are paying for their access. So why should Google have to pay more to get me their stuff faster?
Right.
It's, you know, the whole thing is ridiculous, and it's extortion.
Yeah,
it's always stored.
No argument. The deck has always been stacked.
Oh yeah.
Why are we? And the funny thing about the internet is that we all sit here and we act surprised when it happens and we get morally outraged. But this is how it's always been. This is the world.
Yeah. So think back to the railroads.
It's time in the balls. So, I still have not seen an episode of Chug. I'm getting all the updates, and I'm quite looking forward to the show, but I did get a package right before I fucked off and came over to London. And,
well, hang on real quick. Chug is the only Kickstarter that you and I have both ever funded.
That is true, yes. That's the Zane Lamprey drinking show. We both quite like him. We liked his older show. And I didn't even just go in just for the show. I decided to go for one of the bullshit Kickstarter incentives, where I kicked in a little bit more for a, you know, a limited edition T-shirt to along with
I as well.
Yeah,
we did the same.
Yes, so same package. And that was a significant period of time ago.
I think we were like in episode 4 or 5 at that point. Now we're 33.
Yeah, yeah. So there's been a lot of updates about when these incentives would ship and everything like that. And I was quite pleased to see that it actually had shipped, because I was figuring it was going to be vaporware and they just might never show up. But they did show up, and I opened up my package with some glee. Only discover a shirt that probably cost roughly $2 for him to create.
I got the same shirt. I opened it, and my jaw dropped when I saw it. It was the steamiest little pile of black T-shirt goo that I've ever seen. I mean, Cafe Press would have done better.
Now, here's what bothers me. Kickstarter in general has bothered me. I don't like the idea that we're funding these things and not getting a part of it. The incentive thing I always thought was a little bit of crap. The timing. He sent out massive amounts of updates about how, you know, the incentives haven't shipped yet because he was not happy with the quality of them, and he was going to different vendors, and he was personally looking into to make sure that all these people that gave him the money to make a show and fund his life would get high quality incentives that they paid for. And then when the shirt finally shows up, and let me just a brief reminder that I do work in the music industry. We're a design company for musicians. We have designed shit tons of merchandise. We have worked with tons of vendors. We have seen every bit of quality up and down the spectrum and figured out pricing levels and things like that. This is the cheapest piece of shit you could possibly get out there. It's horrible.
It is absolutely horrible.
It's stunning how bad it is. He paid next to nothing. So this is exactly what I thought Kickstarter would be. Pay for the incentives. They figure out the cheapest way to keep as much cash as humanly possible and screw you.
And, yeah, I mean, the thing's – you got the black T-shirt, right?
Yeah, yeah. That thing's going
to – Hold it up to the light. It's like almost transparent.
Yeah, you can see right through it. The ink that they, I mean, that's going to last like 10 to 15 washes total. It's going to shrink like no tomorrow. It is just, it is the lowest quality possible t-shirt that you can possibly get out there. Horrible. Absolutely horrible. I would actually write him and make a comment about it, but I don't see the point.
Because yeah, he's off around the world filming his show and having parties and all that stuff right now.
Yeah, exactly. So another
what
big
you gonna do?
Kick in the fucking balls from Kickstarter. From the one time that I actually did pay for an incentive, and it sucks balls.
I know. There's a serious market opportunity here for somebody to start a company that is just for people who do incentives on Kickstarter to be a quality provider. You know, that just focuses on, I mean, that's the best market right there, because everybody wants to give away crappy t-shirts. And there are some great t-shirt companies out there. Beautiful silk screening, you know, end-to-end fulfillment. You know, you send them a graphic and your customers get t-shirts. It's like,
but those
partner with these guys.
But those actually cost money. And then you have to, like, put that money into it, which nobody wants to do. Because when you get a big pile of cash, and you're sitting on that cash to do your project, and then somebody goes, excuse me, you promised to do all this stuff, so we're going to have to take a huge chunk of that cash away from you. They start to go, no, this is mine. They do not want to part with it. Even Corolla, who didn't use Kickstarter, he used Fund Anything, I believe, was bitching about that on a show the other day. He was like, yeah, we're so happy, we're starting to make the movie, we're blocking everything out. And then I was like, then somebody reminded me that I have to do all these fucking incentives. Well,
yeah, and
that's
don't,
what you signed
here's
up
the
for,
deal.
Bitches.
Yeah. You got the money, give the goods.
Yeah, and make them decent.
And at least this is where, you know, just planning comes into effect. Like, figure out how much a damn t-shirt costs, figure out how much shipping costs, and then build the incentive based on, you know, what the profit is per price point when you take out the incentive.
Agreed.
It's like, okay. It's like, this is simple math, and they.
But again, this is one of the things one of my problems with Kickstarter is you've got people who don't understand the every aspect of the business that they're getting into, rushing ahead and taking your cash. I'm sure he had a TV show, and he has a merchandise line beforehand. This guy knew. Zane knew what this stuff would cost. And
speaking of his merchandise line, I used to have one of his hoodies that I bought from his previous show, Three Sheets.
Yeah.
That thing lasted me for years. It was one of that's why I had high hopes for this. His merchandise has been the best quality of any TV show merchandise I've ever seen. This is why I'm so disappointed.
Sad to say, my thought is immediately then he decided it's not worth it to me to part with the cash to get good quality stuff. I want to keep it all for my show and my life.
Or he
hired somebody off to do it.
Subcontracted and had the intern do it.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, bad taste in my mouth from the one Kickstarter that I actually did fund, and I haven't even seen the damn show yet.
Yeah. And another, a little more follow-up on another one we bagged on, Penn Jillette, his whatever, his Make Him
movie.
Angry project.
Yeah. Funded. Bad Penn or whatever. Yeah.
I could not. I mean, I like Penn. I don't love Penn anymore. He's kind of gotten under my skin, but gotten on my nerves recently. His ice cream was amazing from The Celebrity Apprentice. I can't wait to get more of that. But this movie does not look like anything that would even remotely interest me. So
I am, yeah. That,
great, great. He got funding for a movie that I don't think anybody's going to watch besides the people that funded it.
Yeah, I feel the exact same way. I love the Penn & Teller show. I enjoyed Bullshit when that was on TV. I read his book. It was okay. I'm a little burnt out on him. Is a bit of a one-trick pony for me, and I'm just not interested in this movie whatsoever at all. So good on him. He got his money. Go make your movie, and I hope that the people that paid for it like it, and if you offered t-shirts as an incentive, don't use the same company that Zane did.
Absolutely.
There's Kickstarter. Whee!
Yo, seriously? Are you shitting me?
Jimmy Kimmel has been in the news recently for his twerking punk, as it were, and I still give him kudos for that, I think.
Yeah.
He's in the news right now because he has these little round tables of children that talk about adult topics like war and crime and all this other stuff, you know, world news, basically.
Right, from the mouths of babes, as it were.
Yeah. And there's one where this little white boy talks about killing all the Chinese. With a little Chinese girl next to him. And it's it's a stupid little bit. It wasn't even that funny.
Right.
But there are now petitions on change.org to take Kimmel off the air. And this is one of those things where I'm just floored and flabbergasted by it. Like, this is a comedy show, people. Yes, they want him off the air because he's teaching children hate speech.
Did you say it was on change.org?
Yeah. Oh,
hey, change.org, people, change the fucking channel.
Yes,
you're that exactly. Offended. It's a TV show. It's a comedy TV show. It wasn't even that offensive of a bit. Kimmel didn't respond to it by saying, oh, yeah, that's a great idea. He said, should we allow the Chinese to live? That's an interesting idea. But shut the fuck up. They don't have enough supporters on their petition, and I hope that nobody actually joins in on this. This is ridiculous. It's stupid. It was a joke. It's not offensive. Give me a break.
Yeah, if you just read it, it's like, it's sensitive. People that are too sensitive. Yeah. This politically correct culture can suck me
off. There are worse things within 30 seconds. There are 25 worse things in 30 seconds of South Park, and you're going to get upset about this? I guess it's because it's on a major network, and they figure they can get money. I don't know. Whatever. This is stupid.
And they're live children instead of animated children.
Oh, okay. That makes a difference. Who knew?
Yeah. No, this is just mind-boggling. That's all the credence I'm going to give this. But it's been floating around, and it's done. Stop it, people. Quit being idiots.
I agree, wholeheartedly.
Welcome to This Week in Shit We Put on Our Computers.
I have a app to avoid this week at all costs. This was making around about 2 days ago. It's called Knuck to Unlock.
Right.
It is a two app double punch. You put one app on your Mac and one app on your iPhone.
Okay.
And when you come close to your computer, you can just knock your iPhone twice, and it'll unlock your computer if you use a password, which everybody should.
Yes.
And I have a very long password, so I thought, oh, that'd be cute. Let me try it. $4 for the iPhone app. The Mac app is free.
Okay.
So I get it all installed. I get it all paired up. You know, I drop my $4, and I'm all happy. I'm like, okay, this looks cool. Let's see how this works. And when I'm done installing the software on the Mac, it says, give it a try now. Press here to lock your Mac.
Right.
I said, okay. Press to lock my Mac. Yeah, it locked it. All right. It locked it so good. It took me about 2 hours to get it to unlock.
Oh, dear.
It wouldn't boot right after that. It was just fried it.
Now, is this because you kind of, let's be honest here, you really customize your Mac? You think if you just had it straight up install, this might have gone just perfect?
My Mac is not that customized. I've got a bunch of stuff running, but it's not.
Okay.
It's like I don't really. It's not like the old days where I'd be in there like playing with the resource ports on the system files and all that crap. No, no. It's pretty stock, but just with extra stuff.
Right.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So I finally get it back up, and it's still running. So I'm like, okay, I'll leave it running for a bit and give it a shot.
Right.
Once I finally got my computer to work again, thank you for the hours of productivity lost for $4. And it didn't work. It like, okay, I had my phone in my pocket, and I went to the screen. It's got a little blue circle, and it can tell when you're knocking on your phone. So I'm sitting here knocking on my phone, knocking on my phone.
Knock, knock.
So it seems when the phone is in a lock state, which it generally is in your pocket, won't
right.
work.
Oh.
You have to press the button to get to the next screen. You have to kind of wake it up and then knock it.
Right.
So that's kind of silly because they don't show that on the commercial on the website. Yeah, all in all, this was a waste of $4 and several hours of my day. And I cannot recommend enough that you do not install it. And you should read the terms of service, too, because the terms of service basically say that by downloading this app and you agree to – it's like all of the terms state that if you disagree with any of these, you shouldn't download the app. But
right.
you can only get to the terms of service by downloading the app and installing it and reading the terms of service.
Oops.
And they say, oh, we try and put this in natural language. I'm like, well, why don't you read your shit before you put it into natural language and you would realize that it's stupid and doesn't work. it's a fail on every front.
All right.
I am affronted. Yeah, stay the hell away from it. And you can only use it. Oh, here's the last bit. You can only use it on one computer. Okay. I have two, which, okay, great, that's stupid.
Yeah.
And it puts an icon in your menu bar, which I wrote to their support email and say, how can I get rid of this? Because there's no preference to get rid of it.
Right.
And it was pushing out another icon that I really need because there was just not enough real estate, and I don't want icons in my menu bar that I don't want in my menu bar, and that's one of them.
Right.
And they just sent me back, like, almost 8 hours later, they sent me back a form letter with a FAQ that said, sorry, we can't respond to your email right now because we're swamped. And I'm like, you're swamped because your shit's broken.
Yeah. Well, so they got your form.
Uninstalled, deleted. Yeah, uninstalled, deleted from the iPhone. I'm a case for do not do this. Save your $4. Yeah. Seriously. And when it did work, it's not that cool. You'd think it'd be cooler, but it's not that cool. I want my Mac to unlock when I walk up to it.
Yeah, that's totally should do that. With the, you know, if you got your iPhone in your pocket and it's unlocked, it should just go bing. That'd be sweet.
Here's the other really weird bit. When I installed the Mac version, I've got a little snitch running, and I can see what calls this app is making.
Yeah.
It was calling Twitter. It was calling Facebook. It was calling all of these different services. There were literally about 15 services that the app called.
Right.
Before it would even initialize. And I was like, what's going on here? Because in the preferences for the app, there's no Twitter integration. There's no Facebook integration. Why would you want that? It's an app to unlock your Mac. Yeah. Why is all this social stuff in there, and what are they taking? So even on that, I was almost ready to dump it at that point, but I'm doing this for science. I'm doing this for you guys. So I went through it. But, yeah, just the fact that they're sending all of this data out and just pinging these services is really, really bizarre.
Yeah,
and
that doesn't make a lot of sense. I can't imagine why they would have that built in, especially since they seem to have not bothered to spend much time actually building their app.
Yeah, I don't trust them. I don't trust the app. And I stay away from it. Stay away from it. So
will do.
Now, on the gaming side,
oh dear Lord,
there was a great game by Chillingo a couple of years ago called Anomaly, mm-hmm. which is a reverse tower defense game.
Okay.
Like tower defense, you usually build up your towers and the armies try and get through.
Yes.
And try and stop them.
This time you're the army trying to get in.
You're the army. Okay. Yeah, and you're going through this city of aliens with their towers, and you're trying to get through. It was fun. It was a great little game. I probably spent 20 hours on it. I think it was a couple bucks back then. Now, Anomaly 2 is out.
Mm-hmm.
So it looks really good. I mean, the first one looked okay, but this one looks really good. It plays great on my iPad mini, the first gen, not the new Retina one. So that's a good starting point. They do say that, you know, some of the older devices you should not run this on, but on my iPad mini, it was great, looks gorgeous. $4.99, larger story, larger worlds, really nice 3D. It's all in all so far, and it plays almost identical to the first one, except you've got these cool transformable mech units now that go blow people up. It's cool. I give it a big thumbs up.
All right.
To check.
Yeah, I'm not going to check that out. You already killed me with the Plants vs. Zombies too.
Here's one that I'm going to tell you not to buy, just because I couldn't bring myself. I know I have a budget, and I was still under budget this week.
But right.
This was the top paid app in the iTunes store. It is Duck Dynasty: Battle of the Beards.
I'm surprised the people that are into Duck Dynasty actually know how to use iPhones.
I don't know, man. This is a really popular show. I've seen like a 13 second clip of an episode, and it just, I can't watch this. I can't watch like Swamp Loggers and Alligator Men and, you know, all that crap. I had to watch some of the Gold Digger ones, and it was not that entertaining. And it just, Duck Dynasty seems like it's, you know, Loggers meets Honey Boo Boo and Jersey Shore all crammed into one with big ZZ Top beards. I don't know. I haven't seen it, so I may be a little quick to judge, but I could not spend the money on Duck Dynasty: Battle of the Beards. If a listener has tried it, if you've tried it out there, leave us a comment in the show notes, grumpyoldgeek/33, and let us know if I'm just talking out my ass, or if I should go drop my 99.
Yeah, I'd be interested to hear what the actual gameplay on that is, either. Battling beards? Well, that could be interesting, but who knows? Whatever.
Hey, go find out. It only cost you a buck.
Maybe I will. Maybe I will. I already
blew my money on Knock It Off app.
Yeah. So I also did something in the interest of science this week while I was here in London. London is notoriously hard to get around. I mean, if you want to talk about a city not being on a grid, you'd be harder-pressed to find any city that is worse and less on a grid than London. Twists and turns everywhere, streets end. You just don't know where you're going half the time, even when you kind of know the city like I do. So I decided I would go out one day and use only the Google Maps app, which Google Maps is always for LA and for my, you know, when I'm sitting on my desktop, it's my go-to. Then there was the big, you know, kerfuffle about Apple Maps, you know, coming out and pushing Google Maps off the phone. And everybody was really, really upset about that and said it wasn't a good enough product and blah, 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 blah. So I went out one day and just used Apple Maps to get around and find my various pubs and places I wanted to go. Apple Maps kicked the shit out of Google Maps.
That's interesting.
It was way easier to use. The navigation was quicker. It was quicker to be able to find things. It was more responsive. It was more accurate. I'm sold. Like, you're on your thing about trying to only use, like, baked in apps. I'm on board 100% as far as the maps go. I don't think I'm going to go back to Google Maps at all. Apple Maps was way more intuitive and just a way more pleasant experience.
And now that Apple Maps is built into Mavericks, you can do sharing between the two and with your iCloud account.
Yeah.
I mean, you could do that with Google with your Google account, but I've never got it to work right. Right. And Google screwed me a couple times. They cost me about 2.5 hours of traffic delays because I was taken away home and back in Pennsylvania, and I got almost there, and the road was closed, and I had to backtrack an hour to go all the way around, and it's a mess, and it was a road that had been closed for about 3 months, and it hadn't made it into the Google Maps, so I did check Apple to see if they had the right fix, but I. You know, I've been burned by them a couple times, so I'll give it a shot.
I've got to say, anybody that's been holding off and, you know, still wanted their Google and they're pissed off about it not being native to your phone anymore, my experience was unbelievably pleasant in comparison to Google Maps. It worked absolutely fantastic. I was able to get to every single pub, and I was still able to use it after I'd been to my sixth pub.
One out of one alcoholics recommend Apple Maps.
Damn right.
And Apple Maps on Mavericks is really nice. Having it on your desktop is really cool.
Well, I love the fact that you can share between the two. I would be a full-time convert after this trip, except for the fact that I have a Mini back home, and I actually have to use Google Maps to send to the car. They haven't built that into Apple Maps yet. So get on that, Apple.
I thought you meant an Apple Mini, but you mean a Mini Mini.
Mini Cooper, yeah. I can send direct to navigation to my car from my desktop, which is absolutely fantastic. So,
now, do you have a problem bagging on BMW drivers, even since your Mini is made by BMW?
Why'd you have to point that out?
Hey, you know,
it's kind of like the go-kart
transparency.
Of BMWs. Yeah. I mean, I love having the BMW engine. That's certainly fantastic. But I think I've avoided all the BMW traps by having a sort of English car, just built by the Germans and made better.
So the Germans did actually win the war.
Yes, they did.
This week in false advertising.
So the cheerleader effect is a. I guess this was something that was coined in How I Met Your Mother way back in the day, where Neil Patrick Harris looks at a group of women and says, yeah, collectively they're attractive, but individually they're sled dog ugly. there's an article in The Atlantic this week that talks about why people are more beautiful in groups.
Okay.
New research recommends recruiting a wingman or woman with a complimentary face when you go out.
See, I always thought you were supposed to pick somebody that was uglier than you, so you looked even better.
Well, I guess there's an averaging effect, so you don't want to get too ugly because then you're pulled down. You want to find somebody that's actually probably a little better looking, and then you're brought up.
Bring you up, yeah.
Yeah. Because like, as they say, you've seen A Beautiful Mind, right?
Yes.
So the game theory in that is you never go for the hottest chick in the room. You always go for the underlings.
Yes.
So this would probably help you if you had went out with somebody that was better looking, and he goes after the best looking person in the room, and then you're left with the pick of the litter, as it were. It's a really cool article with really interesting science behind it that, you know, lets you – it talks just about how we perceive – people in groups and how we do this kind of averaging. And it's totally true. Think about when you go to the bar and you see a group of hot girls and you talk to them and, you know, from afar, and even when you're talking to them, they're all, you know, relatively good looking. But then when you like focus in on an individual one, then you start to see all the imperfections and the flaws. And I mean, that works both ways. So it's guys and girls. It's just a general human trait.
True. Yes.
I just thought it was a, fun article with just little bits of science.
Yeah, I like the article too. It was a fun little read. I love the end though, because in the end they bring in kind of just what is such a current meme right now, which is about getting offline and actually being out with people. So the ending paragraph is, the nice part of this idea is that it might give us another excuse to socialize and travel in numbers. For almost all people, relationships are integral to health, and time spent socializing offline correlates with quality of life. Maybe we actually look more attractive among friends, not solely because of complementary bone structures, but because we're actually happier, because we are with people. Yep. And not sitting in front of our computer crying.
Yeah, I thought it was a good way to wrap it too.
Very cool. Interesting to read. Go check it out. It's pretty funny.
And then go out and when you're done out with a bunch of friends and have a good time.
With some slightly better looking than you friends. Let them pull you up.
At the library?
Ooh. We talk a lot about, you know, the NSA and the CIA and how terrible they are now. And I went back and found a book about some of the cool roots of kind of basically what most people would think of as the Q branch, where they make the crazy gadgets for James Bond.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of thing, like our version, the guys in the CIA back in the Cold War days. It's called Spycraft, the Secret History of the CIA's Spy Techs from Communism to Al-Qaeda.
Right.
Al-Qaeda, depending on your take. I'm only halfway through this book. It's a fairly big book. It's amazing. I love this stuff. I love just the way that these guys thought, the nutso stuff that they did back in the day in Russia, just trying to get information.
Right.
And this is what happens when you have, like, you know, this great war of intellects going on and trying to figure out what the other guys are doing. And it's a fun read. You know, I don't want to even think about the stuff that's going on nowadays when I read the book, because it's like you have these guys that just need to come up with these great ideas. They ran out of enemies, so we're the enemy now.
yes, so they started using it on us. Yeah.
And I want to talk about one thing that was actually a Russian spy device. It was a microphone that had no power source, and they couldn't figure out what this thing was. They found it in a plaque behind an ambassador's desk that was given to them by like a group of kids, and it was on the wall for like 4 or 5 years. And it had a microphone in it, and they couldn't figure out how it worked for years. And it turned out that somebody could sit across the street and blast a radio signal at it,
right,
which would then activate it, and then like they could get the signal back from what the vibrations that were going on in the room. So it required no power, and it's kind of like an RFID tag almost, like where they don't have any batteries in them, but you can send a radio signal at them that powers them, and then they get the signal back, kind of thing. And the crazy part about it was the guy who invented it was Theremin.
Oh.
Yeah, after he invented the Theremin, he went back to Russia, and they threw his ass in a prison camp, but had him, pulled him out to make all this stuff, gave him like the highest award that that Stalin could give, but kept him in the prison camp. They wouldn't let him out.
Lovely.
Yeah. So it's stuff like that, stories like that, and like all just the crazy stuff that our guys did over in Russia just to sneak into places, and all the stuff they came up with for evading KGB surveillance. It is a fantastic read. I'm loving it so much.
Nice. I might have to download that and read it on my flight home. I didn't get much of a chance to read because I dipped into movies on my flight and I've been running around, but I'm still working on the Morrissey book. I got past the kind of somewhat boring and very sad descriptions of his childhood, and I'm on the fun part where he's actually in the Smiths and they're in the music industry, and he's just starting to catalog everything that's wrong with the music industry and just bitch about it, which is a lot of fun. And it's also fun.
Yeah, I was going to say, how could you put fun and Morrissey together?
He's actually quite witty and not wrong about almost every observation he makes about the music industry. And this part's been highly enjoyable for me because I work in the music industry. It's also been fun to be kind of dipping my toe into it and reading pages here and there while I'm in London. You know, I'm going around and just like I'm in the places that he's talking about or going past them. So it's been fun to read it while I'm here. Jury's still out on whether the book's good or not. I'll finish it this week and I'll have a report next week.
Cool. And one of your favorite books, I know, is Ender's Game. The movie's finally out. Did you get a chance to see it yet?
I have not seen the movie. That'll be something I do when I get back. This is the internet age now. There are about 10,000 op-eds out there, especially because, you know, Orson Scott Card is basically a homophobe and hasn't been able to shut his mouth up. Apparently, they basically just stripped out the action parts, made that into the movie, and I didn't see a way that they were going to do all the fun, like, kind of intellectual mind game stuff as a movie anyways. It's supposed to be a good time, fun, but unless you've read the book, you don't understand why anybody's doing anything or the deeper significance of it, so...
Well, we'll find out. I haven't read the, I read the book once, okay. Years and years and years ago. Before, I mean, like long time ago.
Right.
So I'm going to go check it out. I'm not going to deal with the boycotts or any of that stuff. It's a movie. I'm going to go see it.
Separate the art from the creator.
Yeah, he's a fucktard. We all know that.
Yeah.
He's got his magic underwear on and whatever. I'm just going to enjoy the movie.
I think you should, let's both go see the movie. I recently reread the book, and I think it'd be really interesting for you to go and just see the movie and then maybe read the book after, and then we can talk about it, because that might be kind of interesting. So.
Sounds like a plan.
Cool.
Security!
So the world of security and viruses has gotten a little creepier this week.
Yes, it has.
There's an Ars Technica article about this new virus that they're calling Bad BIOS.
Yep.
that has the ability to jump quote unquote air gaps, which means that like computers that are not connected to anything can get infected, or you know, it can be moved around in various ways. It's got self defense. It won't let you get rid of it. It's deep in the BIOS, which is like the core. Yep. Of the computer when it boots
up.
It's Mac
and PC. I mean, there's nothing.
And Linux.
There's nothing this thing can't get to. And it's frightening. I mean, it's the air gap thing is just unbelievable. Absolutely unbelievable.
Yeah, the fact that they're getting network traffic from computers that are unplugged from the Ethernet and at some point power. You know, so it's a laptop running on battery, and they see network traffic. It's not until they unplug the speakers and the microphone that they can get it to stop. So it's using subsonics to talk from one computer to another, which is just crazy.
It's unbelievable. It's absolutely insane. It's insane. Where is it sending it? What the hell's going on? Nobody knows. Unbelievable.
Yeah, and it's a security researcher found this, and he was having a hard time getting people to believe him. And... Yeah, fortunately, he's got such a good reputation as, you know, a legit security guy that people are, you know, people are behind him and they believe him. A lot of people just can't find it and make it do what it's doing. But I can't wait to see more research on this because it's nuts. I definitely check out the article. It's on Ars Technica, and we'll put a link in the show notes.
Your virus software isn't going to stop this.
No,
nothing's going to stop this, apparently.
Oh man, it's right out of science fiction.
No, it really is. I mean, this could be a hard sci-fi story. It probably is. It's probably a couple of them, but this is real, which is absolutely insane. So no security there.
Nope. And at Google, like we talked about last week, how the NSA was picking up traffic between the data centers, and Eric Schmidt from Google is outraged. So I don't know if he's feigning outrage. But he's come out on record saying that he's pissed off about this,
right?
Which is good, I guess.
Yeah, I suppose.
I mean, it just proves the point that it doesn't prove anything. Unfortunately, that's what I mean. He could be feigning it, but I hope.
I mean, I assume somebody over there had to know. Somebody must have noticed, and they chose not to say anything until it was already leaked and out there. So, my thought is feigning outrage, but whatever.
And the next story from the NSA this week is that they basically consume everything.
Yes,
it says no. This is a New York Times article saying no morsel too minuscule for all consuming NSA. And they're just getting everything.
Well, that was a discussion that we had when Dr. David Teeter was on. And my argument is that storage is so cheap now, so simple, that they are collecting absolutely everything and just storing it just in case. And that appears to be the case. So I was not wrong. Yeah, let's just
storing it and going back
grab absolutely everything. And then when something happens, we can go back and look at the timestamps on things and look at absolutely everything, including, you know, my shopping list for that day.
Yeah, and it's like if their case is to be made that they're gathering all this data for prevention, it goes out the window with that.
Exactly.
So you have to do analysis before the event instead of after the event.
So let's talk about my personal favorite browser, and yours as well, I'm sure.
Opera. you mean Internet Explorer?
Of course,
sorry.
The one that, you know, our parents use.
My dad uses a Mac.
Good. Ha. Impressive.
Actually, my whole dad's side of the family are Mac people because I trained them from a young age. Literally, I gave my brother his first computer when he was three. Which was an old Mac Quadra 650.
Well, they have it a lot better than the South Koreans.
Yeah, this is crazy that you have to use Internet Explorer if you're doing online shopping in South Korea because it's of a security law, which is, you know, well, that's kind of ironic. Yeah, let's make them use the least secure browser in the world.
Purchases can only be made through Internet Explorer. Asiana Airlines. That's absolutely unbelievably insane. But what are you going to do?
Well, it's a 14-year-old law. They should maybe update the laws.
Yeah, it's time to update the laws. It's the most out-of-date browser known to man. It's also probably the least secure, except for maybe Opera.
I don't think Opera is...
Are they still making it? I thought they had packed it in. Are they still going?
Oh. No. Opera. I mean, I know Opera Mobile is out. I stopped following Opera Desktop about 3 years ago when no client actually put it on an RFP anymore. And if it's not on an RFP, it ain't for me.
Exactly.
No. And fortunately, everybody's dropping IE7 off their RFPs now. It's 8 and up.
Thank God.
Okay. You try doing responsive design in IE7.
It doesn't work at all.
there's some hacks, but it's not pretty. It's not pretty. So South Korea, for being so technologically advanced, get your head out of your ass and get with the times. Boing Boing has been getting really big on the podcast bandwagon. They've taken over. Glenn Friedman's podcast about the new disruptors. They've taken over the new disruptors that used to be on Mule.
Right.
And now it's a Boing Boing podcast, and they're starting up a bunch of them. And the one that I really liked is there's a new podcast from them called Incredibly Interesting Authors.
Nice.
And their first episode is with Scott Adams of Dilbert fame. it's hosted by Mark Frauenfelder. And I thought it was a really good first episode of what will hopefully be a great podcast series.
Cool. I've always been a big fan of Scott Adams. He's an interesting guy. So,
yeah, and his new book looks actually pretty interesting. So I'll try and pick that up.
Cool.
He had that weird thing where he couldn't speak for a couple years, which I kind of heard about, but I didn't know if it was mental or whatnot. But they actually had to go in and cut some nerves in his brain to his vocal cords, and he had to like reroute the paths to be able to speak again. It's really crazy.
I knew nothing about that. I'm going to have to listen to this podcast.
Oh, definitely. It's not that long, but it's really good. I was really entertained, and Mark's fun. Mark's always fun. So it's a really cool podcast. And check out their other stuff. Boing Boing's doing a pretty knockout job with all their content. And especially if you fly Virgin America, you can watch good buddy Shani Jardin do her thing with the Boing Boing TV stuff. It's
nice.
Fun.
Very cool. So I picked up on your recommendation. You'd been talking about Dan Carlin and his hardcore history for quite a while. And I just never thought I had a block of 5 hours to listen to any of these because they're very, very in-depth. But traveling over to Europe, a lot of free time. So I downloaded quite a few. Death Throes of the Republic. I had to go with The Wrath of the Khans because, you know, Khan! It was just too funny. But I didn't get a chance to listen to any of them. But I also had downloaded Blueprint for Armageddon 1, which is his newest, and it goes into basically Europe and World War I and World War II and why they happened. And it seemed incredibly appropriate as I was coming to London and going over to France, and it's all about them. Wow. These are great. His voice...
Told you.
Yeah, his voice isn't annoying at all. I listened to basically 2.5 hours straight. I still have a half an hour left on this one. He's funny. He's incredibly, obviously, knowledgeable about the subjects before he goes in there. The insights are really, really good. What could have been, what should have been. This one in particular talks about how he doesn't believe in fate, but he starts to list off all the various balls that just, no matter how people tried to stop things, they just kept rolling. Absolutely unbelievably cool. It is the best breakdown of World War I and World War II I've ever heard in my life. This is so much better than any textbook you've ever had in school. Unbelievably great. I can't wait to go in and just listen to the rest of these. You know, they're daunting because of the length, but you really don't even notice the time passing.
No, that's the crazy part about it. When you're done with them, you're like, wow, that was, you know, a day and a half of my life, but I am 1,000 times smarter, energized, and I want more, you know?
Yeah. I can't recommend it enough now that I've dived in. So you got both of us saying that Dan Carlin's Hardcore History is an unbelievably great series. Now, just because I only dip my toes in, there's only, say, like the past 20 or so episodes that are available. I'm assuming he sells the older ones that are no longer
out
there?
Yes, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, you can go back and buy the old ones in packages for like each show. So since I'm out, I was thinking of going back and picking up some of the ones, because some of the ones I'd originally listened to are now off the list.
Right.
And I kind of want to go back and listen to him again, because he talked about, there's one about the Dresden firebombing that was just,
oh, I'd love to hear that, especially, you know.
Oh, it's bone chilling.
And then you go and read Kurt Vonnegut's book. So good times tied in together.
Yeah.
I mean, I love this so much that I totally want to support him. So I'm going to go back and buy some of that stuff, because it's great to get it for free. But if you find something for free, you should pay or donate or something.
Yeah, this is one guy I really want to support, because he puts so much time into these shows. I mean, he puts months and months of research into these.
Yeah,
and he's got another show called Common Sense with Dan Carlin,
right,
which is kind of like like his take on modern events,
right,
type of thing, which is pretty decent. I recommend that, because he does those more often,
right.
But he doesn't, when he's like deep into doing the hardcore history and stuff, he doesn't do them as often.
Yeah,
I'd imagine. But they're really, you know, they're hour shows, 45-minute shows. Great to like keep you interested in the history stuff while he's busy doing the hardcore histories, like doing his research, because it's been, you know, 6-7 months since he did his last one. That's why I was so excited that there was a new one out. Now I'm just like, can we get to the next one? You almost want to say, I want to know what happens next, but I mean, it's the story of World War II. But he's got so much information in there that you've never known.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. I mean, I consider myself relatively knowledgeable about Europe and World War I and World War II, and there were bits in there that I was just like, what? Really? I had no idea. It's really good. Can't recommend it enough. And like I said, I really actually want to get some money to this guy. Hopefully he doesn't make cheap t-shirts.
I don't want his t-shirts. I just want his content. Yeah. I really don't want his t-shirts.
The content's fantastic. I'll have to listen to the current one as well. But if you're into history and want to go back and learn about something, you can't beat this series, as far as I can tell. So it's pretty amazing.
Yeah, and we actually had a comment on Facebook about somebody who picked it up from the recommendation, is loving it too. So
excellent.
There's lots of fans out there.
Ooh, fancy.
Nikon has released its new DF retro camera, which is a 16 megapixel digital camera, uses all the old lenses. The thing is, they made it look like an FM2, which is an old film camera that I used to love, and on the front. And then you flip it over, and then it looks like they're regular electronic cameras, the D series.
Right.
I when I first saw it, I was like really excited, and then I flipped it over and I saw the back of it, and then I got very less excited. And I kind of said it looked like RoboCop slept with a Pentax K1000, and this was their baby. It doesn't really, if you know what a Pentax K1000 is, it's funny. And the price tag is ridiculous. It's $2,800.
Yeah, well, and, you know what they're doing now. I mean, this is they're having a smaller market of people to sell to. I mean, even the most kind of like semi-amateur, semi-pro-am people are almost okay with their iPhone 5S cameras. So what you got to do is create all this kind of fetishized products, right? And sell them.
Yes, at postalgia.
Yeah.
Yes, postalgia. Yeah. And, you know, like I said, if it wasn't so ridiculously expensive, I'd even consider it. Right. But since I just got rid of all my DSLR stuff, I'm staying away from it. But, you know, if I was into the DSLR scene, I would probably almost want to get it. Like I said, it's like this weird hybrid of old and modern, and it just didn't really work on every level.
Right.
But, yeah, everybody that's got a DSLR now, they're so good that – you know, you almost don't need to get a new one like you do with, like, you know, computers. You need one every 2-3 years. Uh-huh. There's just, you know, they make these things to last forever. I had my D300 that I just sold. I had that thing for, like, since the day it came out. And that was years, and that was, like, 6 or 7, 8 years ago.
Right.
So they're not making a lot of money on those things. So, I mean, I see where they're trying to go with it. I think it's pretty from the front. Hideous from the back. If you're rich and want to buy a toy, go for it. But they didn't do anything major with the internal specs. It doesn't have like a massive sensor or anything crazy like that. It's just kind of like a recycled current version DSLR for a lot more money.
Right.
So, but it does look fancy. Now this next one doesn't really look that fancy. It looks kind of twatty. Looks like a giant scarf pillow. thing. It looks like almost one of those things you'd get at the airport lounge before you went on a long trip to
the little blow up things that you stick around your neck.
Yeah, they go around your neck. This is the Hudving for cyclists, which is an airbag. It's an airbag that has sensors to trigger it when you're falling and gonna land on your head, and it pops up and poof. I've seen neck things like this for motorcycles. This is the first one I've seen for cyclists. I always thought we should have just full bodysuit things that turn you into like the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man if you're gonna fall.
and it just blows out all around you. It's a great idea. I would sooner wear this than a helmet because I don't really care for wearing a helmet when I ride. Definitely not fashionable. I just checked out their shop and their ideas of making them look cool just make them look even worse. But I'm into the idea. It's cool.
I thought it looked good on the girls, not on the guys.
Well, looks like it could be a scarf or something.
Exactly.
I mean?
Well, it looks good on girls with long coats in the winter. If you're wearing this with a bikini at the beach, you're going to look like an idiot.
Very true.
They don't take that into account when they're making the Hudving.
The Hudving.
The Hudving. You get Hudvink by the Hudving.
Very cool. Yeah, I'd love to see. I mean, I think a lot of this stuff is going to go more and more this way. You know, sensors are smaller and cheaper and easier to get into clothing and stuff like that. I as soon as they make it a bit smaller so it doesn't look like I'm basically wearing a neck brace, I'm into it. I would totally wear that when I go out and ride.
Yeah, I would too, for sure. It's a little bit small. I mean, it took them 7 years to get to this point, but I think at some point they'll bring it down.
Yeah, I agree. So pretty cool. My big find this morning was a monkeys use binds to move two virtual arms. I think this is cool as hell. Study led by Duke researchers, monkeys have learned to control the movement of both arms on an avatar using just their brain activity. This is absolutely amazing stuff. I mean, I love this. You know, it's totally... I mean, it's going to get us to the point where we're just sitting in our couches controlling everything with our minds. But, you know, when I was going to college, I was really into like neuroscience and was considering majoring in it. And, you know, back then we had no idea what we did with anything with our minds. And they're starting to kind of figure it out. So it's pretty cool. I'm really into this stuff. And anytime anything pops up in this area, I'm intrigued. But this is really fantastic. I mean, they were able to basically train these monkeys to just sit and think about moving their arms, and virtual arms would move. That's awesome.
That is pretty awesome. That's good. In about 10 years, that's going to put the Xbox Kinect to shame. You just put on your cap and your glasses, and then you go off and play Call of Duty. You know, sit in your vat of goo with your IVs and poop bag, and welcome to the Matrix.
Yeah, pretty much. Welcome to the Matrix. We're heading there real fast. But, we're talking, like, I mean, just the way to, like, you know, future transport and you know, jets and military applications and gaming and everything. I mean, when they figure this stuff out, a massive shift in the way the world is and the world works. It's going to be awesome.
Yeah. Even dictation. You know, think about something. All the kind of things that you could do. I'm in.
Yep.
Let's go faster.
I'm in too.
Go.
Cool.
Would you turn that damn thing off already?
So I've been hanging out at Combustion Manor, where we did the episode with Mike Vinicor, who has all these pinball machines in his basement.
Right.
And he got the new Tron Legacy pinball machine, and I'm just like a sick addict when it comes to this thing. I can't stop playing it. And it's a pinball machine. You didn't think, you know, I'm not generally a pinball guy, but man, this thing is addictive. I'm going to put a link in the show notes to the Stern pinball site so you can check out the video of it. And the video of the pinball machine that they're selling stock is nothing like the one that Mike has. This is all tricked out. He's literally in a 3-inch-high game of Tron that plays the game in a tiny little LCD. It is the coolest thing ever. But it's got the soundtrack. It's got, you know, the Daft Punk soundtrack. It's got all the quotes from the new movie. It's tight. It's cohesive. And it's fun as can be. So if you're out and about and you see it, play it.
Will do.
Or find a buddy that has one. That's all I got to say.
I might have to fly to Chicago for that. Yeah.
Yeah, come on down.
All right, who's this asshole?
One of the most disturbing stories I think I've read in a long time. It was about a guy who ran a stop sign. He didn't even run the stop sign. He failed to come to a complete stop at a stop sign. Gets picked up by the cop. They think he's carrying drugs. Take him back to the station, give him rectal exams, then take him to a hospital, and then where he's given forced enemas, like multiple forced enemas, where he has to basically poop in front of the officers and the doctors, and they go through his poop multiple times, more rectal exams, and they finally knock him out and give him a colonoscopy, I believe. Forced colonoscopy.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like,
wow.
I mean, after the first three enemas, you can't find what you're looking for. Jesus.
They really got up this guy's
and the x-rayed x-rayed him multiple times. Yeah, this is what we call some hellish shit right there. It's disturbing. It was in New Mexico, so I think I'm going to have to go around New Mexico next time I'm traveling.
Yeah, this is. I mean, that whole area. I mean, remember there was that guy in Arizona, the police chief or whatever, that set up like those mobile jails. And what the hell's wrong with these people? This is insane. This is going completely above and beyond any kind of rights that they have to do any of this. Oh, jeez. You read these stories like this and you just want to burn everything down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This guy deserves all
this guy,
the money.
Yes, he deserves...
he should get New Mexico for this.
He should be handed New Mexico on a platter. Yeah, I agree. I hope he gets millions of dollars. And I hope...
Yeah, and when you look at like the warrant breaches that they did, so like they crossed jurisdictional boundaries. So I mean, this guy can own the hospital where the doctors were at because it was all illegal procedures that he gave no consent for. Quite the opposite, which I don't blame him. You want to stick something up my, you're not getting my consent.
Just for me, it's also. I mean, at this point, if they must have just been fucking with him because, like, if you haven't found drugs through the kind of normal searches that you would do, if you've gotten to the point where you're basically doing a colonoscopy, that's the tiny amount of drugs he must have up there. I mean, come on, people. This is stupid.
Yeah, and multiple x-rays, too. They gave him, and if you can't find it on an x-ray, then where did they think it was?
It's not there.
You know?
So I've had quite the fun week over here in the UK. I do want to give a big, massive shout-out to Cadbury's. I'm a huge chocolate fan. Apparently we're just not allowed to have nice chocolate in the USA. You know, your Reese's Pieces are fine, but you can't beat a Cadbury. The chocolate is just better. It tastes better. It's made better. And I was a big fan of the fruit and nut bar way back in the day that Cadbury made. Cadbury has just recently rolled out this entire new line of chocolate bars called Marvelous Creations. We found out about them a little while ago. I had a friend send me one of the bars that was called a Jelly Poppy Popping Candy Shells bar, which basically has Pop Rocks and jelly beans in it.
Oh my god.
it's stunningly good. It's unbelievable. You take a bite in and you get the fizz in your mouth and everything. So I was super excited about that. That's the only one that I knew existed. And I got over here and blah, blah, blah. I found another one called Cookie Nut Crunch, which is even better. It doesn't do any crazy fizzy stuff, but it tastes fantastic. I just ate one right before the show. Unbelievably good. And then I looked on the website because I wanted to put the links in our show notes for those two bars. And they have something called Cola Pretzel Honeycomb. I need to go find this one. You can't beat it. Cadbury chocolates are stupidly good. I wish we could, you can get them in the States, but you kind of have to go to specialty shops. I know in LA that the King's Head pub also has an associated shop with it, which has all kinds of English candies and food, so you can get there.
I'm sure there are they also make those Cadbury Easter eggs with the goo inside, right?
Yes, they do. Yes.
Yes, I think that's sure. How I know them, but that's the only mass market really Cadbury stuff that you can get here, right?
Yeah, that's really the only thing that they mass market and put throughout the U.S., and I wish they would change that mind, but I just think they're more sophisticated with their chocolates over here. So a huge shout-out to Cadbury's. You have you've probably made me gain 5 pounds over here. Thank you.
Real quick, I saw you posted a picture of the back of Prince William's head.
Randomly, I was on my way to go buy a bunch of these chocolate bars because we want to bring them home to, and I'm going to pass them out to some people. So I woke up this morning and I was like, okay, I got my little shopping list. I hopped on the tube. I went over to Marks and Spencer because I wanted to pick up some of the chocolate digestive biscuits that they have there. So I'm staying at the South Kensington, and I had to go over to High Street Kensington. I walked off the tube, and there was about 40 cops. And about 300 people all just standing around with cell phones, and I just kind of like muscled my way through like you do in London to get through a crowd, and next thing I know, Prince William was about 4 feet away from me.
Cool.
I was like, oh, that's the prince. Hey, how's it going? I just wanted some chocolate. I gotta go. So, yeah, it was just completely random. I just walked right into him, basically. So
it's funny. My first trip to Scotland, I was there for 20 minutes and almost got hit by the Queen. It's weird how you run into royalty there almost, literally.
Yeah, I almost quite literally did. And everybody's been very impressed, but for me, it was just kind of a pain in the ass. I was like, I want to go over there. There are too many people blocking me. I need to go over there. Who's the bald guy?
That's what my thing. I was going to Edinburgh Castle, and I'm walking up the High Street there, and like people start lining up and lining up. I'm like, what's going on? You know, and it's Scotland, so they don't speak English there, so I had a hard time communicating. Yeah. And
I've discovered in Scotland, the drunker you get, the more it's like a universal translator.
Oh, absolutely. Yes, absolutely. Yeah. But it's fun. So my closing shout out is finally we are ready to launch Does It Have Legs, the new podcast on the Grumpy Old Geeks quote unquote air quote network. This is the fun awesome. Movie show that we're doing to make a logo, which is the single worst part of doing a podcast. Forget all of the, you know, host wrangling, recording equipment, microphone setup, all this crap, editing. No, the hardest part of doing a podcast is getting the logo right. So
it can be a pain in the butt.
Once the logo is polished, when I get time, it'll hopefully come out next week. I'm thinking about doing this on a Wednesday launch schedule.
Okay.
Because we tend to record on Wednesdays, and we've got a couple in the can. We've got 4 of them in the can now. So that gives us some buffer through the holiday season to try and get everybody together.
Right. And you don't have to be quite as timely as we try to be. So.
Yeah. Well, Felicia Michaels, who was a guest on our podcast in the early days, gave us a tip about if we're going to do a different type of show that's not news-based, just to make it evergreen so people can go back and, yes. and check out all the old episodes and they're just as good as the current ones. So we did that. And I'm hoping. I have high hopes. Hopefully it doesn't suck. I don't know. We'll see. You never know.
I'm looking forward to it. Can't wait to hear. And I will be guesting on one at some point.
Absolutely. I'll put a posting on the Grumpy Old Geeks Facebook page and website and Twitter when it's ready to check out. So there we go. So excellent. Safe travels, my brother, and see you back at some point soon.
Thank you, man. I will be back shortly, so have a good rest of your week, and we'll talk to you all next week, people.
Keep up with the Grumpy Old Geeks on the web at grumpyoldgeeks.com, on Facebook at facebook.com/grumpyoldgeeks. Or email them at podcast@grumpyoldgeeks.com. Have a good week.
Okay, last one to kill a bad guy buys the beer.
We're driving to Florida.